Hey, you're listening to Cut for Time, a podcast from Faith Church located on the north side of Indianapolis. My name is Claire Kingsley. Each week, I'll sit down with one of our preaching pastors to discuss their Sunday sermon. Cut for Time is a look behind the scenes of sermon preparation, and they'll share with us a few things that we didn't hear from the sermon on Sunday. Thanks for listening. Okay, so today is a special Cut for Time episode because I'm joined with Pastor Joey and also John North, our speaker from Sunday. He is from Australia and he comes to Indianapolis every few weeks to help us with our evangelism training in our leaders and our lay people who have volunteered for Life to Life groups. And so, John, I'm going to invite you to give an overview from your sermon on Sunday, and then Joey and I will toss all of our questions to you and see how that goes.
Sure. So Sunday, I spoke on just the last few verses of Acts 13, and it's a part of the sort of section of Acts that's talking about the turning to the Gentiles. And my message is kind of like the core passage about that turn where Paul and Barnabas say to the Jews, you've counted yourselves unworthy of this message. You've cast aside the message of the gospel. And so we are turning to the Gentiles. And it's already kind of happened in Antioch, where Gentile believers have become Christians without becoming Jews. And already on the island of Cyprus, Sergius Paulus, the Roman proconsul, has become a Christian without becoming a Jew. But it kind of is epitomized in what happens here in Antioch, Pisidian Antioch, as the Jews really reject the idea that Gentiles can become Christians. And so this specific statement from Paul and Barnabas, we are turning to the Gentiles. And so in my message, I really unpacked sort of what was leading up to that and how significant that statement was for all of church history. But also then looking more on the personal level, what principle was behind how Paul and Barnabas approached people when they came into a new city? And how does that fit into our own lives as witnesses as well?
Mm-hmm. So what is that principle?
The principle that you need to just be a witness for Jesus with everyone you encounter, so that you can identify those that are seekers, those that are really looking for answers and wanting to talk and find out more about a relationship with God. You'll never find those people unless you just talk to everybody, right? And the idea of those initial encounters with people is not that you're kind of shoving the gospel down people's throats, everybody, whether they want to hear it or not, but that you just open the door in conversations to where it could go deeper into spiritual things, and you see who bites, who is ready to really go deeper, and maybe is even feeling quite broken in their lives and looking for answers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, John, I got to say, I mean, I've been through 2 years now of the evangelism training you guys do, you know, the year that you were with us with a large group and then leading another group through it. And even still, the way you put it on Sunday, like my eyes opened in a way that I just hadn't quite put it together yet. Like what I realized is, like, if we do the first half of the principle and just the first half, like be a witness to everybody, that's just exhausting. Like you feel like, okay, everybody, I have to get the gospel message across. I have to somehow, you know, get them at least get up to the finish line, whether they decide they want to cross or not. And then on the other side, the other half of your principle of identifying those who are seekers, it's impossible. If I only try to do that, I have no idea. But I found a lot of freedom in the way you put it of be a witness to everyone and then move forward with those who identify as seekers. And so it's not a all the time exhausting or impossible task. It's just being open with everyone and then moving forward when God opens doors.
Yeah, that's right. And once you identify someone as a seeker, then you don't have to be nervous about what can I say that won't offend them or be pushing too hard. Once they're a seeker, you can just point them to a relationship with God very directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have a cultural question for you too. Sorry, Claire, I just keep jumping in with questions. Does the word, so the word seeker in like US churches has kind of a negative resonance a little bit because of the big seeker sensitive movements of the 90s and the early aughts or whatever we call the 2000s. Does it have that same, does the word have that same resonance in Australian culture, or is it felt differently?
I don't think it's felt quite as negatively there, maybe, but certainly it's an idea there in the New Testament, people who are seeking for God, searching for God, wanting to hear the message.
Claire, what does the group call it? You know, we had signed up for to be one of the churches who receives text messages from people who are seeking out of the He Gets Us campaigns that were nationwide ad campaigns. What did that group call people who were searching? I know they had a different term for it because I think they were trying to
Explorers.
avoid, oh,
Oh, yeah.
explorers.
I
Yeah, I
think.
think they were trying to avoid like the seeker language that is weird in the US. So just for anybody out there who's like, oh, seekers, that's not a, ooh. It's okay, explorers, searchers, like use whatever word you want.
Yeah.
People looking for Jesus.
People looking for answers.
Yes. So, John, what did you have to cut from your sermon on Sunday that you wish that you could have included or maybe explored or expounded on a little bit more?
Well, there were several things that I didn't actually have to cut because I had already cut them, but that I wished I could have included in my message. When Paul talks to them about the gospel, and he says that everyone who believes is freed from everything from which you could not be freed by the law of Moses. And I just thought of what Paul says in Romans 12, too, when he talks about the two kinds of change that people experience. And he says, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And the two different words in the Greek language that it was originally written in are really instructive to these two kinds of change. I don't be conformed. The word there has to do with a mold that they would press things into. And especially when they were making the Roman coins, they would have this mold that made out of hard metal with kind of the inverse shape of Caesar's head and whatever numbers were going to be on there. And they put soft metal into it and put the other side of the mold on and hammer it with a mallet. And then they'd open it up and there would be the coin. And so Paul says the world wants you to squeeze you into its mold. It wants to pressure you to live with its core values that are not God's core values at all. But be transformed. That's what God wants to do. And the Greek word for transformed is actually a word we've just brought into the English language and made an English word. It's the word metamorphosis. And you know, the big picture of that, of course, is a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. And you can just imagine if you put a caterpillar into a mold the shape of a butterfly and brought the hammer down, you would not end up with a butterfly. The change that happened with metamorphosis is a change from the inside out. It's not a change from external pressure. And what a mistake we so often make with people when they turn to Christ from the world and are freed from that pressure of the world. And then we just try to squeeze them into the church mold. Put kinds of expectations and pressures on them about a way to live, where what God wants to do is to transform them from the inside out by the work of His Spirit and His Word at work in their lives as the Holy Spirit uses it. And so, this idea that people couldn't be freed from the law of Moses by being pressured into trying to live a way that would please God, none of us can do that, even as born again Christians, but only as we turn to Christ and ask Him to live His life through us, trust the Holy Spirit for His work in our lives. That's the only way. And that's the way of freedom, isn't it? So I just thought there's so much depth in what Paul was saying.
Yeah, there is. I was just reading something this morning that referred to Romans 12:2, and pointed out that the confirmation word is a mechanical process, external mechanical process, and the transformation word is an internal organic process. But I think you're right on there with what we do in the church sometimes is we take the transform idea, but we try to make it an external mechanical process. We try to make it a mechanical process working on the internals, and that doesn't work either. It has to be a natural growth from the
Yeah,
spirit of
and these
life.
Gentiles who had become Jews were trying to keep the law of Moses, this external pressure.
Yeah, so you brought up in the sermon the missionary mindset of the Jews. I know often when we read the Old Testament, we think of it as more of a come and see type of the Jews were a, hey, come see what God is like. But there was a lot of going out, and you talked about how even more in this time there's a lot of going out. So what could you contrast for us, maybe what's the message that God-fearers would have heard from the synagogue rulers compared to the message they heard from Paul and Barnabas? Why do you think the one from Paul and Barnabas was so much more freeing than what they were hearing from the synagogue
Yeah, I think
rulers?
in all likelihood, what they heard from the synagogue rulers initially was the same message as Paul preached in Athens. You've got all these gods, but I want to tell you about the God who made heaven and earth. And that was attractive to people. It's in how you have the relationship with God that is so different, because to those, the synagogue leaders, their message was, you have to start following all the laws of the Old Testament in order to be acceptable to God. And the message from the Apostle Paul is this message of forgiveness and freedom. It's so completely opposite to the message that so often people hear, whether it's from legalistic churches, even, or from areas of Christianity that just emphasize guilt and what you have to do in order to be right with God. That's not God's true message, right? It's that I love how someone put it one time, religion is spelt D-O, but real Christianity is spelt D-O-N-E. That it's what Jesus has already done for us that makes the way to a relationship with God. One of the other things, Joey, as I went back and watched your message from a couple of weeks ago and your comment that up until this point, missions that has happened has been kind of accidental in the church. They didn't have a strategic approach to reaching the world, but it was rather just people reaching their personal relationships. And often when we're witnesses, this is how we think too, right? I've got these existing relationships with people. Who can I then just start being intentional with to reach for Christ? And that we need to do both that and strategically thinking, where will I find people that are very aware of their brokenness and ready to respond to God? And movement building studies have shown that there are several groups of people that are especially responsive to God. One is the poor, the other is immigrants, third is prisoners, and these three groups in particular are especially responsive. And just think, where can I place myself to encounter these kinds of people who really feel their own brokenness and their need for God and the need for help? Not only my existing relationships, but reaching out beyond that as well.
Being strategic and intentional.
Yeah, that's right.
John, I like that. I had a couple of people tell me they didn't like that I used the word accidental, that missions was accidental up to that point, because they're like, well, in God's sovereignty, nothing is an accident. And that's when I realized I'd used the word accidental, not in the colloquial sense, but in the philosophical sense, that there are traits of a thing that are either essential to it or accidental to it. Essential traits or characteristics are like, well, if you don't have that, that's not you anymore. And accidental, it's like the color of a car is not an essential trait. It's still the same car, whether it's black or red or white or blue or whatever. And so, yeah. So thanks for the opportunity to explain
what
I meant by
too,
accidental.
There's no accident with God, but certainly from our perspective, just like everything is now for God, there's no future or past, but from our perspective, there is. And from our perspective, if we're not being strategic, it's something that just happens along the way.
And it's so fascinating here in this part how intentional the church became to make mission and missions a core part of what the church is, such that now a church that is not reaching people is not really a church. There's a part of the core essential
that's
identity
right.
of a church that's missing.
Okay, John, we had somebody text in a question on Sunday that you and Joey could both answer, which is why in the book of Acts do they sometimes refer to a people group as Romans and sometimes it's Gentiles? Why not just use Gentiles? Why be specific in this use of these words, different categories of people?
I think what you find more commonly as equal words is Gentiles and Greeks. And sometimes even in the same paragraph, he'll refer to Greeks and Gentiles as parallel terms. And that's really because the Greek language was the language of the world after Alexander the Great had conquered so much of the world just prior to the Romans. And so much of the world spoke Greek. So just the nations were epitomized by calling them the Greeks or calling them Gentiles, which is just the Hebrew word nation, the nations. But Joey, I think you had some observations about the use of the word Romans as well.
Yeah. So Claire, when you brought this question up before we started recording, I did a quick word search just to see how often the Greeks and, you know, the Romans shows up in Acts, because that's where, as you know, Paul, Luke are traveling around, where we're seeing them interact with these different cultures. So, I mean, obviously Gentiles is a blanket word that describes to everyone who's non-Jewish. And often the word Greeks is used that way too, to refer to those who are influenced by Greek culture as opposed to Jewish culture. But they are two different ethnic groups, nationalities, two different cultures with their own languages, Greek and Latin, their own systems of government, money, economy, all of that. And so from time to time in Acts 14, 16, 25, 26, we see Paul interacting with these different groups, with the Greeks or with the Romans. And so they're referred to more specifically than just as Gentiles in some of those contexts.
Okay, thank you. John, I have a question also following up from your sermon. Your introduction to your sermon was sharing a story about your flight experience from like the last time you came to Indy. I was surprised that at the end you were content saying that that small interaction with that gentleman when you guys were landing was enough. Like you said that he had been holding on to this question the whole time. You guys missed all this opportunity to talk, and he expressed some sort of connection to you and what you had shared about being a believer. And he said, you know, what do you share with these people? And you had said, like, we could have been talking about this the whole time. And in the end, I thought maybe you are going to like get your luggage and then let's sit down and keep talking, or let's just, before we get our luggage, let's just stop here and grab a coffee and keep going. And you were content with saying that was it. That was it. That was the interaction and that was enough. How did you know? Is that like, how can you be content with saying it doesn't need to go further than that? And that was a step in his journey in his walk with Jesus.
Yeah, that's a great question. In our final words there at the end, I'd gotten to share with him that, you know, so many people have a real awareness of their own brokenness and are looking for answers in their lives. And I help people find those answers in a relationship with God. And that's what he really connected strongly with. And then the plane was emptying out, and we had to move on out. And we just arrived at the crack of dawn. So things weren't really open in the airport yet. And I think probably a part of it is that I've grown so much in my understanding that being a witness is not just sharing the essential points of the gospel and challenging a person to make a decision, but reading where a person is at in their journey towards Christ and what is the next step for them, and have I helped them take that next step? And I really felt like in this guy's case, him acknowledging openly that he felt his brokenness and hearing from me and really connecting deeply with this idea that many people really feel their brokenness and are looking for answers, and I help them find answers in God, that this was the big thing for him, his big next step. Possibly I could have encouraged him to stay on and have more conversation. Part of it may have been the bleary minds of both of us coming off the graveyard flight. But I do really believe that God brings us into people's lives as a part of their journey. And that if I have helped them take a big step towards God, then God is going to bring other people into their lives to help them take other steps. Or if there's someone I know, I'll have other chances to take other steps with them, that it doesn't all depend on my one conversation for them to come into a relationship with the Lord. And when I saw how he was responding, I was just very confident God was reaching out to this guy and had brought me into his path for this step.
That's like one of my favorite takeaways from going through Evangelism Shift in the last year, which was just being a part of the whole and not seeing like it depends on me to deliver every single morsel of information from start to finish as it pertains to the gospel. Like I get to be a part of the whole and know that and just really trust that like God invited me into that one conversation, but I don't have to have all the conversations in one conversation. So it was really freeing, honestly. And I'm like, that seems more doable. I can do that. I can help somebody take just that one next step. The hard part, I think that something you just shared is you said, you've learned to be able to discern where people are at and what is that next step for them. And I imagine that maybe just comes from a lot of practice because I think it'd be really difficult. It's still something I'm trying to figure out is what's that next step and knowing everything in between range in that gray space of in what is it in the seeker's walk. You know what I mean? Joey, do you have any thoughts about growing in that space and like maybe it's your own personal growth, or have you come across any specific other resources or things that you would say you'd recommend?
I agree with you, Claire. I think one of the most profound learnings from Evangelism Shift and the life-to-life training is the journey towards Jesus. I'd heard of the Engels scale. If you're a missiologist, you know the phrase and the steps someone tends to take on their journey towards Jesus. But actually seeing it laid out in the training curriculum and then spending a lot of time talking about, okay, this person is probably here, and this person seems like they're here, and this person's here. Like, I know I can't recite all 13 steps along the way. I'm sure John could, if we gave him enough time to look it up.
Nah, he
You
has more.
developed, yeah, I know you've got, I'm sure you've got it. So it's probably got to be from that practice. Or that, like you said, just from lots of practice. But the Life to Life group I led, that was the thing that everybody resonated most with. It was like, oh, my friend, my brother, my husband, my whatever is like here or here or here. And that was the biggest eye opener for all of us, was just discerning where the people we love are on the journey towards Jesus.
And almost always you discern that, even in a one-off encounter, by open conversation with someone before you start trying to help them take a step, just asking questions and hearing from them what's going on in their lives and their experience of Christianity or their journey with God. Just asking those kind of open questions usually helps you discern pretty quickly where they are and what a step forward would be for them.
So I'm pulling out my life to life manual because I think, John, the guy you're describing, where is it? There it is. I mean, is somewhere in the like begins to understand their brokenness, but not yet recognizing a need for personal response to Jesus. Somewhere in there of like understanding what God is like, discussing spiritual things with a Christian. So that's like still 8 steps away from trusting Christ for salvation, which would be a lot of ground to cover at 5 a.m. in the Indianapolis International Airport.
Yeah.
So.
Joey, you had something that you wanted to bring up with John, from first service versus second service.
Yeah, John, you in the closing comments after the sermon, after the last song, you were kind of commissioning the congregation with a final charge, and you had this great line first hour about how everybody's employers were their mission agencies, paying them and putting them in the presence of people who need to hear about Jesus. And you didn't say it second hour, and I was like, oh man, hit it home. Come on, John. I'm giving you a shot to share it now. That was such a great thought.
Yeah, well, I remember it coming to me one time just thinking about this that God is sending us right into every encounter with people in our lives. And He has put us into a relationship with people in our lives who don't know Him. It's not an accident. It's not just, oh, look, this person's in my life who doesn't know Jesus. He sent me into their life because He wants me to share Him with the people around me in life. And I thought, oh, well, how is that different from being a missionary? And I thought, well, everyone is called to be a witness like this with people in their lives, but there's some parts of the world where there's not Christians to be witnesses with the people there. And so He sends people from here to there to start being witnesses with those people. But then you have a sending agency and you raise support and they cover your salary to live in that country and be a witness. But really, when you go to work, your employer is funding your life as a witness, your missionary work with the people around you, and funding your work with your neighbors who don't know the Lord and your family members. And to just recognize God has sent me and He's provided this company to fund me. But my primary thing is the purpose God has for me in this world, and that's representing Jesus.
That's great. I love it. Thanks.
Reminder. Yeah. Thank you, John. Thanks for your time today, Joey and John. And it was really fun to have this conversation and just like have somebody like John, you're the new voice to the podcast. And so add a little bit of life to it. And Joey, I appreciate your thoughtful questions also and at what you added to the conversation. So thanks for being
Thanks,
here.
and obviously we should thank John Mark for what he brought to the conversation, because like you once again held on a fully adult conversation while being smacked in the side of the head by a kid saying more, more, more. So Nana, good
Nana.
work. And his eyes were just following your hand, like, is there food in there? Is that for me?
Yeah,
Yeah.
thanks. Oh man, it's always an adventure, that's
That's
for
right.
sure.
John Mark, you have anything you want to add?
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Cut for Time. If you wish to submit questions to our pastors following their sermon, you can email them to podcast@faithliveitout.org or text them into our Faith Church texting number, and we'll do our best to cover it in the week's episode. If this conversation blessed you in any way, we encourage you to share it with others. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.